This BizNews briefing is brought to you by Investec Business Banking. Make the move from business as usual to Investec Business Banking.
It's Tuesday, the 11th of March, and this is your BizNews briefing. I'm Bronwyn Nielsen. In our first story today, I caught up with Wayne Duvenage, who is the CEO of OUTA, the organization undoing tax abuse in South Africa, and asked him what he anticipates from the budget tomorrow when it is tabled in Parliament by South African Finance Minister Enoch Godongwana.
The government has not been focused on cutting its cloth to suit its expenses. It turns to the taxpayer year after year asking for more, and yet it spills so much on the floor and it doesn't go and collect where it can collect. And those are the two main items that we're saying government should be focusing on. I think it's clear to us, we did some research and sent it on to the Finance Committee, that the Laffer curve has been reached years ago, which means really you don't necessarily enjoy any additional revenues if you increase VAT, company tax and PAYE. So VAT is the last resort, and it's the worst place they can go to. And I think we saw last month when the Minister of Finance was contemplating a 2% VAT hike, that they are desperate now, and that is, they're not even thinking, quite frankly. They're out of touch with the reality of the people. And so what we did, and I think this, we're guided by so much information that's out there. The big one obviously comes from Edward Kiesvetter, who's made it very clear. And he's the SARS commissioner, and they've done their modeling. And there's money lying around, wasted, not being collected, which if SARS is beefed up, and they could go and follow, you know, customs fraud and tax evasion and under-invoicing, illicit financial flows. There's so much out there that they can do, which they were doing, by the way, before Tom Moyane came and decimated the unit that was focused in that area. They need to rebuild that capacity. And that alone, according to Edward Kiesvetter's modeling, is about 450 billion rand a year. And SARS is looking for an increase of 60. There it is. It's lying there. And even if you got half of that, 260, 270 billion, you're well on your way to starting to reduce our deficit, our debt that we need to repay, which is costing us a billion rand a day. So there's so much to be said around becoming efficient and going after the corrupt syndicates, the criminal syndicates that have infiltrated many departments. And we're hoping now that the minister's had some time to think about this. He's certainly not going to get 2%. I guess to the answer to your question, Bronwyn, is there's possibly a 0.5%. We hope it's a temporary thing. Remember the last 1%, they went from 14 to 15, was supposed to be a temporary increase, and it has become a permanent increase. So we're hoping that whatever slight adjustment, and it needs to be very slight to VAT, is going to be a temporary one, and that they've contemplated other areas. I can give you one area where I think we would be, you know, amenable to accepting a 50-cent increase in the fuel hike, the fuel levy. Now, why I say that, we've been opposed to this for many years, and the minister has obliged by not increasing the fuel levy for 3 years now. And I think we need to commend him on that. But this time around, in this desperate situation, it could be that a 50-cent hike, which would give them about 11 billion rand towards their shortfall, would be a palatable increase. Again, these are things you can adjust later on. So there's a short-term need, but the long-term gains have to come from, we've listed quite a few there, and another one that can go quite quickly and fetch some funds, is there's a surplus of about 55 billion rand sitting in the CETAs, and they're not supposed to have these surpluses, and government has a right to go and ask for those surpluses, and that again would alleviate the pressure that they're currently under.
I also spoke to Kevin Lings, chief economist at StanLib, to get his views on what to expect from the budget, and Kevin is not overly optimistic that we are going to see huge spending cuts given the short time period that the minister has had to rework his budget.
No, I'm not optimistic. Optimistic would be if government indicated that they were going to cut expenditure significantly, reduced wasteful expenditure, and not increase taxes. That, I think, would be the most appropriate solution. And then, yes, I would be optimistic, because I think that would send exactly the right message that government is mindful of the strain that consumers are under, mindful of how weak the economy is. Think about last year, Bronwyn, the economy grew by 0.6%. We've now got that data, 0.6%. And if I look at what drove that growth, it was consumer spending. And in that environment, you're trying to increase VAT by 2%. So what you would be saying is the one part of this economy that's actually growing, I'm going to increase their taxes. That would really hurt. So no, I'm not optimistic we're going to get a great solution. As I say, the best solution would be a cut in expenditure. What I think ends up happening is most of the budget stays the same. By that I mean the types of tax numbers they were talking about, the growth dynamics they were talking about, the fact that they're not going to give Transnet a huge amount of money, the modest change to the Eskom money. I think all of those parameters stay the same. And the only thing that really changes is the resolution to the 2% VAT. So I'm expecting that they will go with a smaller VAT increase of 0.75. I think that was suggested actually by the president. And then on the rest of the money, look to see if they can't change some of the expenditure categories without adjusting the salary increase. Is nothing they can do, and without removing the social relief of distress grant. And so look at the other categories if you can't trim back in some areas. And I think probably you can make that work fairly easily. We are a little bit unclear about whether the DA fully accepts that, because I thought their focus was no VAT increase and a focus on economic growth. I don't think the time frame is going to allow that to transpire. I think that, yes, we definitely need a budget that is much more growth focused and less focused on government expenditure and just ever increases in expenditure. But I'm hoping the best would be that within the budget, the government says, OK, we will look at these expenditure categories and see whether we can't cut back and pull back on some of the wasteful expenditure. So I think in the end, that's probably a reasonable compromise. Not going to excite anybody, certainly not going to excite the bond market, but it's doable. For me, any increase in VAT at this stage, given how weak the economy is, 0.6%, I think that's going to be a net negative for our economic performance. I just don't see how they're going to be able to cut back $60 billion expenditure within a short period of time if you're adamant on doing the salaries and social payments. You probably need a longer time period to try and work out where those cuts need to come from.
I asked both Wayne and Kevin what their message to the South African finance minister is directly ahead of tomorrow's budget.
A firm message would be to the authorities that they have to now go and find the savings, that there will be no surplus funds. All surplus funds need to be returned, that we are going to certainly contemplate the removal of deputy ministers. Certainly two deputy ministers in any department has to change. He obviously needs the ear of the president on that. And that they're going to have to become far more efficient and get pay attention to the Auditor General's reports, where we see billions and billions of rands wasted in irregular expenditure and wasteful expenditure. If he had that message very clear and said, we're not going to be increasing taxes next year, so get your house in order this year, I think that would go down well with the public.
I would honestly say to each government minister, go away and find me 2 or 3% of expenditure that you can pull back on your budget. And I think that is easily achievable across the board. And I think, as I say, that would send a much better message. I would hope that in trying to reach this compromise, what government could say is, we're going with this in the short term. We are going to undertake this revision of expenditure. And if we find that we can pull back on expenditure, then we'll reverse the VAT increase. As long as it's believable, credible. I think that what the DA is suggesting is exactly right, but the time frame probably won't allow that to be achieved. Realistically, you would have to say to each government department, you've got 3 months, maybe even 6 months, I don't know, and to find this type of expenditure. And then I think it's a workable solution.
In the world of business banking, the bottom line can often triumph over relationships. At Investec, we value both. Make the move from business as usual to Investec Business Banking. Out of the ordinary.
At Sun Exchange, we make going solar simple, profitable, and completely risk-free. Join over 100 satisfied South African customers already enjoying the benefits of risk-free solar. Start saving today. Visit sunexchange.com and join the solar revolution.
On the international front, U.S. President Trump called on Friday for crypto as a strategic reserve, and the digital currency has come under pressure. Here are our colleagues at Bloomberg with the latest.
Stacey, why did this crypto summit fall flat? Because hopes were pretty high.
Well, I think it's important to realize that unlike markets that react instantaneously, policymaking requires patience. It's a slow process. So, yes, the ball started rolling on Friday with the president's call for the creation of a strategic reserve and digital assets stockpile. There's a lot of details, as we've been discussing. A lot of details still need to be filled in, and there's still a role for Congress to play.
Stacey, with the work that you've done, with the government relations that you built, the advisory work you've been doing to companies trying to ascertain what the government might do, is there consistency enough? Because I think the fact that you're saying it's day one, it takes a while to really digest what a strategic Bitcoin reserve means. But the lead up to the strategic reserve was long, and many had anticipated there would be buying, that maybe it wouldn't just be Bitcoin. We were allowed to get over-enthusiastic about what the announcement would be.
Well, Abby, it's a great question. And I think, essentially, more conversations will have to happen, right? Congress will have to be involved. These are long discussions. I do think, looking at the details, one thing that I think is really interesting is, you know, the part that the public was able to see. Mm. There were interesting comments made, especially by the Treasury Secretary, where he suggested that the Treasury was going to be playing a role in assessing the tax code and looking at risk weighting. And I thought that was a really interesting hint. I'm very interested to see what Treasury does working with the OCC and the IRS. What the secretary had promised was, looking at applicable regulations and amending or rescinding as necessary. I'm interested in seeing whether he is limiting those comments just to the strategic reserve or whether he was suggesting something broader and there's more to come.
Well, you served within the Treasury Department and you was a staff of the Office of Tax Policy, so you're someone who should know about these tax perspectives. And thanks, Jackie, for holding on for this moment. But Stacey, I am interested in what it means in terms of the future of on-ramps here. We talked about stable coins getting some sort of regulatory clarity. That's something that investors want, not just tax clarity too.
Yeah, that's exactly right. There are calls for clarity across the board. Those are largely in Congress's purview. And this week in Congress, if we can take a quick shift to look at what's going on the other side of Pennsylvania Avenue, there will be this week we're going to have action on stablecoins and on information reporting in taxes. So we're going to see it's a very busy week in these areas, both coming out of the White House, reactions to that, and actual, you know, policymaking on the Hill.
You mentioned that Congress is going to have to be involved. What kind of bipartisanship do we see around crypto?
Yeah, increasing, right? And I think it's important for people to realize, especially in the work that I do, that every Congress is different, right? And so last year, we did see a shift over the years for this issue to be sort of increasingly partisan. But a lot of that was largely to do with the political realities. You had the Biden administration that was signaling, skepticism, right? Some would say hostility to some areas of digital assets. And the heading into a contentious election year, Democrats were going to, defer to their party leader. Now, political winds have shifted, right? We have a Republican-controlled Congress. Clearly, policymaking will be happening in this space. And that middle, that opportunity for bipartisanship is much broader than it ever has been.
I also spoke to Stafford Marcy, who is well-known in the Biz News community on being a Bitcoin maximist, and got his views on the current Bitcoin price around about that $80,000 level.
Yeah, I guess the number one thing is you get the folks that are dollar go up, dollar go down, or Bitcoin go up, Bitcoin go down folks. But, you know, for Bitcoin maxis, which I'm one, I'm a Bitcoin maximist. I mean, we don't really look at the short-term price. You know, whenever we see a dip go down to where it is right now, and the levels are quite low, but we take a look at the entire macroeconomic environment, Trump's tariffs. You know, I think the geopolitical situation in the world because of what Trump's doing is there's a lot of uncertainty in the market. So if you look at Bitcoin, Bitcoin's down. You look at Microsoft, Microsoft's down. You look at Nvidia, Nvidia's down. I think the entire market's down. So the question is, you know, do I sell? What do I do right now? You know, I'll tell you what Bitcoin folks always say. Whenever there's a dip, you buy. Right. That's when you're rushing and that's when you buy, because you're probably not going to see these prices. And in my opinion, if you take a look at everything that's happened with Bitcoin over the last 2 weeks, I mean, we now have a strategic Bitcoin reserve established by the biggest economy in the entire world, by the most powerful human being in the entire world. I mean, we've got the strategic reserve there. We're seeing states, United States states funneling in. We're seeing companies announcing it. We're seeing in South Africa movement happening. So for me, if you take a look at all the macro aspects around Bitcoin right now, yes, lots of negativity. But if you take a look at the fundamentals and the amount of organizational spinning into the asset, people acquiring the asset, I'm extremely bullish. I'm waiting. The upside from here, I think this is going to be the fastest horse. I think it's there's going to be nosebleed green candles after this, and it's going to shock everyone, just like it's shocking everyone now, seeing it go down the way it does. And this is what Bitcoin does all the time. And whenever it does this, people go, you know, see, I told you. And then it changes again when I tell them, see, I told you. And I think we're in that moment again right now. So it stays the most undervalued asset, in my opinion, in the entire world. It's the most misunderstood and most undervalued asset in the entire world.
On the international front, we have Ukraine delegation meeting with U.S. representatives in Saudi Arabia as peace talks get closer and closer.
The Ukrainian delegation is meeting with the U.S. Today. Let me just start off by asking you, what concessions you think the U.S. team are looking for out of the Ukraine delegation, and how do you think that ties in to the conversation that President Zelensky may have had with MBS yesterday?
Yes, it's interesting. Secretary of State Marco Rubio made clear that he was basically wanting to test the waters with the Ukrainians to see what they're willing to concede in some sort of compromise deal with Russia. And that implies territorial concessions, because Russian forces are occupying Ukrainian land at the present time. That's a very difficult thing for Ukraine to sign up to, but it looks like the US is pushing for some clarity on what they could tolerate and what they could agree to in return for an end to this war. Mm. So it's a pretty significant meeting today, I think.
Yeah. And in terms of what is happening with these discussions, clearly there's a lot of progress since 10 days ago when that Oval Office meeting took place between President Zelensky and President Trump. We now know that Steve Witkoff is going to be traveling to Russia, which is interesting because he's technically the Middle East envoy. What do you make of that trip?
Yeah, this is pretty significant, actually, because the last time Mr. Witkoff was in Moscow, he had 3.5 hours with President Putin. That's a very long time for a person of his rank in relation to the president. He went back to the United States, and Trump then had his phone call with Putin, and there were these series of concessions to the Russian position that we all know about, ruling out Ukrainian membership of NATO, talking about Ukrainian concessions of land in return for a peace deal. So it's pretty significant that he's there this week at the same time as the U.S. is meeting the Ukrainians in Saudi Arabia. The pace of negotiations has really accelerated in this search for a ceasefire.
Yeah, and it seems as though the Ukrainian side are okay with the idea of a temporary truce, an air truce, a sea truce, but that is something that the Russian president objects to.
Yes, President Zelensky of Ukraine has said all along that, you know, he wants the war to stop, and he wants a truce, and he's proposed an air truce and a truce in the Black Sea as a way to begin negotiations. Russia has not yet signaled that it's ready for any kind of truce except one that involves a pause when there's a framework peace agreement on the table. So it'll be interesting to see if Witkoff comes back with different impressions from President Putin. But at the moment, the Russians are holding out for a truce at a time when there's a proper framework peace deal on the table, and we're not there yet.
The Trump administration is saying that the U.S. economy will see a period of adjustment as tariffs are implemented across the board. Let's take a listen from our Bloomberg colleagues.
Kevin, this seems to be a very specific message coming from the White House, though we should mention that the Commerce Secretary did speak to Meet the Press saying that there would not be a recession. But what does this new tone coming from Treasury Secretary Bessent and President Trump suggest about a put of sorts coming from the White House?
Well, I do think some of this is about managing expectations and trying to figure out how to spin what looked like some, you know, slightly worrying numbers about sort of where the U.S. economy is headed. But, you know, I think more broadly, you know, I think Trump has talked a lot about tariffs. He's talked about applying them for several different reasons. And I think a lot of the world was hoping that this would mostly be a negotiating tactic where he'd threaten things, people would make, you know, some kind of deal, and then the threat of tariffs would go away. I think some of this is suggesting that the tariffs indeed are really seen as potentially more of a structural change for the way Trump wants the economy to work. And that is going to be more of a long-term effect with an adjustment period. And obviously, in the short term and perhaps the medium term, that's going to mean inflation. It's going to mean a hit to GDP. And it's not obviously really clear whether his strategy would succeed in the long run. But he's got to find a way to start sort of getting people to accept that there may well be some short-term economic pain, which was not something that he campaigned on at all.
That brings us to the end of this BizNews briefing. We'll be back tomorrow with more local and global context. Thanks, as always, for joining us.
This BizNews briefing is brought to you by Investec Business Banking. Make the move to private banking service now for your business.